Hello everyone, what's going on? You are watching Crankcast. This is season 2 episode, I think it's episode 12 actually. I got to the point where I kind of lost count. But I'm your host Tudor, and today we're going to talk about bikes, and we're going to talk about racing, and we're going to talk about regular motorcycles for regular people, and stuff like that. But before all of that, if somehow you don't know, we also have a main YouTube channel called Crank It. That's where we post our motorcycle films. You expect one or two a month. Yes, I know we don't post often, but I have a full-time job, and it's kind of hard to do it that way. We also have an Instagram, that's crank.it, and then we also have a TikTok account, which I became way more active on. So if you want to see way more content from Crank It, you should see at least a video per day on TikTok at crank_it. So you can find us on TikTok there. That being said, enough jibber-jabber, let's quickly go through the news and see what we're going to talk about today. So, sorry about that. But so, Juan Zarco, the MotoGP rider, sets a new top speed record in Qatar. We have a new track limit sensor system for MotoGP. The I'm not going to mention it now, but a Honda product won the Red Dot Award this year again. We have a new CF Moto 650 NK SP. Now, also staying to CF Moto, we have a new 250 SR racing variant, so that's going to be interesting. And then we're also going to talk about the jibber jabber section, where we're going to talk about having multiple bikes and what it's like owning multiple motorcycles. And then finally, we're going to give you the updates on Crank It. How are the Crank It bikes doing? How is the filming going? And stuff like that. But that being said, it's time to go jump straight into the news. And for some reason, this stupid tablet will not go take me where I want to. Oh, come on. Oh, well, yeah, I can do this. Technology is kicking my ass. But that being said, okay, first news topic of the day. Juan Zarco manages to set a new MotoGP top speed record. So the old record wasn't bad. It was around 355, if I remember correctly, kilometers per hour. But now, Juan Zarco managed to reach a top speed of 362.4 kilometers per hour on board of his Ducati. What's even more impressive in this is that this is not the longest straight of the season. Actually, I think Italy has the longest straight. Now, this one from this race isn't short either. It's about 1.1 kilometers long. But still, he managed to reach the top speed just like that. Easy peasy lemon squeezy. Now, to be fair, right, Ducati motorcycles have also always had this advantage in top speed and power. Like, even dating back to the old days, like Casey Stoner days, cornering was maybe not their sharp cornering wasn't their biggest advantage, but when it comes to gunning it down the straight, Ducati has always had it. Their engines were almost always like one of the top performing ones, and they would reach some phenomenal speeds and acceleration. So it's kind of not surprising the fact that Ducati was the brand that managed to reach the top speed record. What's actually more impressive is that this top speed record was achieved with all the aero. So these wings on the bikes just became more and more became bigger. They became bigger and bigger every year, right? Because MotoGP and motorcycles realized that you can't actually use downforce for motorcycling. It's not a car-only thing. And so the thing with these is that they create some drag, right? Whatever downforce you create it by basically hitting and manipulating the air. But by doing that, you have more contact with air, so that would slow you down. So Ducati managed to reach the top speed, even with that extra drag of the wings. So that's impressive. And you have to realize that maybe in the grand scheme of things, like 360 kilometers per hour is not that impressive. Okay, it is impressive. But like, hey, an H2R did 400 kilometers per hour. Well, yeah, but an H2R is way heavier, way bigger. And more importantly, MotoGP straight isn't actually that long. So you don't just have like 10 kilometers to gun it and see where the bike is going to stop. You have to accelerate really brutally up until that top speed. So you can't just gear your entire motorcycle only for those top speeds. You have to gear it in a balanced way for the certain track. And so Yeah, 1 kilometer-ish straight isn't actually that long, and that's the straight. But you have to brake before that, and yeah, keep in mind that you also have to accelerate from the speed, well, depending on how you took the corner before that. So, yeah, straights aren't as long as maybe one might think. Now, riders were asked what they think about his record and what they think if the speed got too dangerous. And I think Rossi also said that, yeah, the speeds are mad, but does it really matter? Not really. Fans are talking about it, so I guess it's good. Of course, like, this does bring up the question of safety in MotoGP. Like, how safe is the sport actually? Safer than the Isle of Man, that's for sure, but that doesn't say much. Now, if you ask me, so, yes, like, this is impressive, right? This record is impressive, and yes, it's extremely dangerous. But is crashing at 360 kilometers per hour really that more dangerous than crashing at 340? I mean, I get it, like, the difference between 50 and 100, between even 100 and 200, even 200 kilometers per hour and 300 kilometers per hour. But there comes a point where whatever you're going to do, however you're going to crash, is going to end badly, like really badly. And it's such a thing of luck, right? I don't think that having like 10 or 15 extra kilometers per hour in your top speed is really going to matter. If you are going to crash at those kind of speeds, if you're crashing at 350 or you're crashing at 360, I mean, you're still going to be like pretty shaken up, if not dead. So I get the safety concerns, but I also think that it's already a really dangerous sport, and I'm not sure what you could do, and if limiting somehow that top speed, first of all, I wouldn't like that, but I'm not sure if limiting that top speed would really help in case if something goes wrong. But I guess we're going to have to wait and see for those conclusions. Now, for the second bit of news, and let's switch it, hell yes! We did it. For the second bit of news, we're staying in MotoGP for this one because we have a new track limit detection system in place. So there, in the past, there have been some controversies about when did a motorcycle exceed the track limits. One example of that is actually Paul Espargaró in last year's Tyrrhenian GP. Okay, maybe that wasn't like he obviously went over the track limits, but the question was like, was it justified or not? But there are a lot of times where you have to question like, okay, is it actually over the track limits or not? So in order to fix this, MotoGP decided to install a sensor system on all their circuits going onwards. And so basically these sensors would detect if any of the wheels of a motorcycle got off the track. Now, this changes the rules slightly because previously the rules mentioned that both of the wheels had to be on off track at the same time in order for it to be considered like a penalty. From now on, if one of your wheels is off track, you are off track, and that's it. So this should bring a lot more clarity to the sport, and I think it's actually not the worst idea ever. Because there were a lot of things like, up until now, right, the marshals couldn't really decide well enough if something was off tracks, because there are a lot of situations where maybe you have only one or two camera angles that aren't that clear. And if you have a camera angle that's somehow from the side, it's really hard to decide if did that tire actually leave the track. And there's also think about, okay, did this tire leave the track, but then did the rear tire also leave it at the same time? Well, maybe the front tire got back on track somehow, and then only afterwards the rear got out. It could be a debacle, right? And it could launch controversies and stuff and different unnecessary discussions, if you ask me. So I think this will bring some clarity. Now, on this topic, though, I do want to say that I really hope MotoGP doesn't become like F1 in regards to technology. Safety-wise, yeah, I'm all for it. Even these sort of track limit stuff, like having sort of a Hawkeye from tennis in MotoGP, yeah, I think this is cool. I do hope, though, that they don't become too technological with the bikes and stuff. Like, okay, the bikes are already technological, but I hope they don't introduce stuff like communications with the pit crews, because I think that can ruin a lot, right? That makes it become a strategy game and not like pure racing. And that's one of the coolest things about MotoGP so far, is that the riders during the race, they don't have direct communication with the pit crew. With the pit crew. And so this adds a bit of, you know, rider intuition into the thing and rider experience. And this makes things more interesting, in my opinion. So I hope MotoGP stays like this, right? So whatever safety related or maybe Marshall related to bring clarity, yeah, I'm all for adding technology to that. But I wouldn't want to add too much technology in like their communications and the way the races work themselves. But yeah, this is all the MotoGP news we have for this week. So now we're going to go to our third topic. And that's Honda winning another Red Dot Award. So Honda won the Red Dot Design Award with their Forza 650 Maxi Scooter. So what is this bike? It's a Maxi Scooter, as I said before. So it's a 750cc scooter made for a lot of things. One thing to mention, though, is this Red Dot Award. It doesn't really address... So yes, it is a design award, but... I have to clarify a bit what it means. So, a design award doesn't really isn't awarded to the person who builds the most beautiful scooter, or not only that. Like, of course, a Fiat Multipla would never win a design award, obviously. But like, how pretty it looks is not the only criteria. Far from it, because in design, like practicality, for example, is also a part of design. Because here we're talking about product design, how the entire package is designed. And so Honda did it with the Maxi Scooter because of their storage spaces, because of how comfortable it is, how it looks, of course, but there are multiple stuff that come to consideration when giving such an award. They won it with this thing. Now, Maxi Scooters are an interesting idea. I never ridden one, but they really want to be sort of the lazy man's jack of all trades, master of none, right? So... they're good in the city because they're scooters, but they're not that good in the city because they're maxi scooters. And yes, I know it's kind of in the name, but they are actually fairly big. Engines are powerful enough, right? Like this is a 750cc, I think it's a parallel twin, if I'm not mistaken. So yeah, it will pull you around and you could definitely go outside of the city with it, right? So you can go on highways, you can tour on it. Like a maxi scooter for touring would actually not be the worst idea. Would be pretty cool. So I'm curious to ride one, honestly. I'm curious to see what's the appeal, because personally, I don't see it. I see the appeal of small scooters, right, for like city riding, but this, why would I like get a motorcycle? Like, is not having to shift gears really that big of a deal, or is having like the ease of access on it that big of a deal? Is it worth the sacrifice? I don't know. I'd definitely love to ride the Maxi Scooter just to maybe get a grip with what's it like and why do people love them. I only rode the scooter, I think it was during a BMW test drive. It was their C300 or C310 GT or something like that. It was a 300cc scooter, maybe a BMW. It was nice. It was really easy to ride. I mean, as you would expect from a scooter. Was it interesting? Hell no, absolutely not. Who are we kidding here? It was as boring as a scooter can get. But it's I can see the appeal of that. I'm curious if I would see the appeal of Maxi scooters as well. Now we have to jump into our fourth topic, and we're talking about a company called CF Moto. And if you're from the US, this might not be that familiar yet. I mean, they do bring like ATVs and UTVs to the US, so you do have those already. But they also have a two-wheel division, and this two-wheel division is actually fairly popular in places like Australia, in places like Europe, and in the Asian market. So they might be coming to the US soon, so you might want to pay attention to this one as well. So they launched this new 650 NK SP, which is a bit of a special version to their 650 naked bike. So in short, what it is, it's a middleweight naked motorcycle. And what CF Moto does in order to differentiate themselves and for them to be such a success is they offer a really competitive price, like incredibly competitive with the Japanese. I'm not even talking about the Europeans, right? They're half the price or even less than Europeans. But they're really aggressive on their pricing and with a quality that's good enough in most cases, right? So the CF Moto is a Chinese company, true, but it's not the sort of Chinese company that you would expect to find when buying, I don't know, a motorcycle on Amazon, right? Or the cheapest bike on eBay or something like that. This is actually decent quality Chinese motorcycle, and this is why they caught on so well. So they had this model, the 650, and now they have this SP, which is a premium version. So At base, it's the same motorcycle, but it comes with a lot of sort of, not only blink, but upgrades and things that make it good and cool. So upgrades include a 5-inch TFT display. That's nice. The bike is Euro 5 compliant, so it is going to come to Europe. That's great, though they're working on their engine technology. And speaking of engine technology, it actually comes with a map selector. So you have multiple ride modes, which change the way the engine behaves. So not only the throttle sensitivity, but also like the way the engine makes power, and like the air mixtures in the fuel injection system are dynamically changed based on what map you choose. Pretty nifty. And also, speaking of pretty nifty, you can adjust all of those with backlit controls. That's something you only really see in some premium bikes. In my new 2016 bike doesn't have them. Like, the model afterwards does, but yeah, that's pretty cool. And speaking of pretty cool, you also have a slipper clutch with a revised 6-speed transmission. So this is not bad, right? Not bad for a motorcycle. But you might be asking, why is this so special? Well, it's special because of the price. Now, converted to US dollars from Aussie rupees, this bike comes out at $5,956. That's nothing. That's truly nothing. $6,000 for this package, for a 650 naked with slipper clutch, TFT displays, backlit controls, it's Euro 5. It's quite a sweet deal, right? If the bikes turn out that nice, it's quite a sweet deal. And also, to sweeten the deal even more, because, okay, like, I get it, right? You might have some trust issues with CF Moto. Maybe you haven't heard about them. They're not Honda, so they can't be as reliable. But what they did is actually pretty smart, I think, in this situation. And they are offering, with these bikes, at least in Australia, they're offering a 3-year warranty. That sounds cool, but maybe not as unique, until you find out that it's unlimited mileage. So you could have to take this bike, put 20,000 kilometers a year, and you would still have warranty at 60,000 kilometers. Heck, in 3 years, if you decide to ride around the globe continuously on it, you would still have warranty even at like 100,000 plus kilometers, and they would cover it. So that's, I think that's actually a pretty smart way to build your trust. And it's the way that a lot of actually Asian companies did that in the car industry, like with Hyundai and stuff. They started offering, or Kia, that they didn't have that that well of a that big of a reputation in some other place, like in Europe or in USA. So what they did is they started these big campaigns for really long warranties, and that's what CF Moto is doing here. And I think it's actually pretty smart for them. But now, time to jump into the last news, and it's also about CF Moto, but we're going to jump with it a bit quicker. So they also launched a 250 SR racing version. So this is sort of their small displacement 250cc racing motorcycle. So actually I have a bit of a story. It's not like a story, but a fun fact about it is there is a local team here where I live in. So Crankit is basically based in Romania. And there is a racing team here called ACSRU, or ACSRU. It's a shit name, true. But the point is, right, for their sort of more junior racers, they actually acquired some CF motorbikes and they converted them to track use. I'm really curious how are they going to do in actual races. But yeah, they've started using them, right? I mean, they had sponsorships and partnerships and stuff like that. But still, the fact that they went with such a bike, hey, I can see this, and actually I can see this becoming sort of a budget racing league if CF Moto is smart and if these things catch on, because they are so affordable that they would make the barrier of entry into motorsports so much lower, because it's not only about the price of a motorcycle, right? Yeah, that one, okay, let's say you acquire a motorcycle, but it's also the maintenance, and these bikes are also pretty cheap to maintain because all the parts for them are actually decently cheap. So yeah, this could bring racing at a more common place where more common people could afford it. That's pretty nice. So just some quick specs about it, right? So this bike has a 250cc single cylinder engine, as you probably expected, and it produces a really respectable 27 horsepower. Not bad. Not bad at all. They did do some small tweaks to like gearing and stuff like that. They made the suspension stiffer so it handles better on the track and just stuff like that. But yeah, overall, it's honestly a pretty cool bike. I'm probably never going to own one. But hey, I think there will be a lot of junior racers that could start on these bikes and be perfectly happy with them. So, yeah. This was the news section. And now it's time to go into our second main section, which is called Jibber Jabber. So I guess we're staying with that name for now. And yeah, today we're going to talk about what it's like owning multiple motorcycles. Now, first of all, as a disclaimer, I do not have a big bike collection. No, I only have 3 bikes. But even then, right? So I see there are a lot of people that would like more bikes, but maybe some of you don't really know what to expect when owning multiple of them. So I just want to like sort of walk you through what it's like and the hurdles you have to go through when owning multiple bikes. Yeah, and I think this applies to owning multiple vehicles in general. But yeah, that being said, the biggest, I can't call it an issue really. It's such a like 21st century issue to have. But the biggest inconvenience, let's call it that. The biggest inconvenience is that one of them will always need something maintenance related. So you've finished fixing, and it's not necessarily fixing, it's just maybe routine maintenance that you need to do on them, but you finish with one of them, you ride for like 3 days, and then you realize that the other one needs something else, or that something broke on this one, or something broke on this one, and had to order some parts again for it, and you have to blah, blah, blah. And you have buy multiple stuff of everything, right? So you have to suddenly I had to buy 3 sets of tires. I had to do a lot of oil changes and stuff like that. And these are all things that, even if you don't do yourself, you still need to manage them, right? So you still need to talk to shops for free individual dates, do your oil changes and stuff like that. So that's one of the issues, right? So that the more maintenance, like even if the bikes are low maintenance, you have 3 of them. So it's like you would take your normal motorcycle and cut its maintenance in thirds, right? So you have to do it that often. And also it's a thing that these things can pile up, right? So for example, at the end of the season, you might need to do a lot of maintenance to all of them. Then you might have some time where you're not going to have to do much maintenance, but then maybe the end of the season comes and then you have to winterize your bikes. And that's when you also have to do a lot of maintenance on all of them. So it can become a bit annoying. And it's especially true with high maintenance ones. So like I have a KTM 300 DXC, a mystery bike that's actually not that hard on maintenance, and then a KLX 450R Supermoto. Both the KLX 450R and the KTM need oil changes every 15 hours. Like on my KTM, on the enduro bike, that's not even that bad because in enduro, I maybe go out like once a week with it, and so the hours don't add up that quickly. But on a Supermoto, you go out for like 5-6 rides, and then you have to change the oil. It's 15 hours interval, so you are constantly changing the oil on that bike. And I'm not complaining, you get a lot of performance for it, but the maintenance is there. And I'm not just talking about the costs, I'm talking about the time you have to spend, because even if these oil changes are fairly easy to do and fairly quick, you still have to do them every time, and every 15 hours that adds up. Even if you have these backup bikes, if one of your bikes is down, as I do, it still takes time and it still takes money. Let's not neglect the fact that, yeah, bikes cost money. For example, my enduro bike, that one breaks a lot. It not necessarily breaks it. It doesn't break by itself. Like, I break stuff on it. And then that one also needs a bit more care than some other bikes, maybe. And it's washing more often, maybe. So you have to also keep track of stuff like insurance and, like, technical inspections and stuff like that. Suddenly, you have to do it for free. So you have to insure 3 bikes. You have to do technical inspections on these 3 bikes. All of these things add up. And they add up both time-wise and money-wise as well. And they add up maybe quicker than you would expect. You have to add the tire cost, right? Add the oil changes cost, coolant changes, brake fluid changes, so many other things that can come into this equation. And even the smaller things add up. Like, for example, right now, behind the camera right there, I have on the table 3 pairs of brake pads for this new bike that I have that I'm still not going to talk about. I have a fitting for my enduro bike, which I'm going to talk about it in just a minute. They just need to be, the weight to be put. Oh, and also have a seat cover for my enduro bike. Also needs to be mounted. These things just accumulated over 1 week, so I'm not even holding them for like a long time, but I need to find the time. And yes, these do cost money as well. So, yeah. Whenever you think of getting multiple motorcycles, just just make sure you can maintain them properly. And I'm not just talking money-wise, as I said. I'm mostly talking about having the time to do it properly. So this was the jibber-jabber section. And now, to the final section, you recognize this logo most likely. So we're going to talk about CrankKit updates. And yes, this is, well, actually the same apartment, but you're sitting where the camera used to sit. It's just easier for me to film this way, so this is why you're seeing this background. Yes, it's not maybe the biggest thing, but this is an audio show at the end of the day. I have a monitor, I can control this. It's good enough, right? It's mostly an audio show either way, so the visuals don't really matter that much, or they shouldn't matter that much. But these are all the updates I want to talk about. So we're going to talk about the Super Monitor real quick. So the Super Monitor is officially at the shop. It's getting all its parts mounted, and we actually found a cool solution for the fan. Initially, I wanted just like a switch or manual switch for a fan or radiator fan. But then the guys figured out a way to maybe mount a thermostat or something to it. And basically that would control the fan, which would be even better, right? Like, I wouldn't need a manual override, so the bike would always stay in its proper temperatures. So that would be really cool. But yeah, so I took it to the shop with a trailer. My trunk was full of parts from plastics, wheels, tires, levers, whatever. Everything needs to be mounted on it. I cannot wait to see the finished product. I genuinely cannot wait to see that. So it's going to be pretty cool. Also, I broke some stuff on my enduro bike. There are actually two main things that I broke. So one of them is actually the right plastics. So I went out riding with a friend, and then I had to turn around for some reasons because his bike ran out of battery, because Hondas and batteries. His bike ran out of battery and had to push for like 2.5 or 3 hours on the way back. It was not that much fun. But on the way back, I launched my bike into a rock on the right side, and it hit the handguard. So I thought it only hit the handguard, but apparently somehow hit the fairing in such a way that it broke off the lower part of the right fairing. So what this means is that I will basically have to zip tie it back in place, because you know what, the fairing itself, like the plastic, isn't broken. It's just broken from the mount. So I zip tie there is gonna fix it. And also, I finally managed to order a new fitting for the gas tank breather hose for my enduro bike, because it was broken where the rubber tube enters the frame, and then basically whenever the bike would be on the side or upside down, and in enduro that happens quite a lot, especially when you're like my skill level, which is not that high. So I flipped the bike and I crashed the bike a lot, and so sometimes gas may drip out of there, and if it doesn't go through the frame, it doesn't go into a safe place, and gasoline can drip on your pipe and stuff like that, and that's hot, and you probably do not want that. But yes, this was the show. So this was, this was episode 12 of CrankCast. I really hope you enjoyed it. If you enjoyed it, please leave a 5-star review on whatever podcast listening platform you're in. Leave a like if you're on YouTube, and leave comments with ideas of what do we want to talk next, apart from the obvious news. That being said, don't forget we also have a main channel where we post motorcycle films. It's called CrankKit on YouTube. We also have an Instagram, crank.it, and then we also have a TikTok where we've been way more active. It's crank_it. So if you want to see way more content, daily content from CrankKit, yes, you heard it well, you can follow us on TikTok. Now, that being said, thanks a lot for listening or watching to this podcast, and see you next time. Until then, bye.